On a brand new edition of the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast, Music City Bowl preview, recruiting notes, Tennessee basketball. We've got a little bit of everything coming up for you on today's episode as we dive in for the first time of many to the matchup with the Purdue Boilermakers. What's a realistic expectation for what Josh Heupel is able to do with his first recruiting class? We discuss that at length here on today's show as well. It's brought to you, as always, by Brentwood Hearing Center, your sound solution in Middle Tennessee for over 40 years. They've got five doctors of audiology, and they're number one for a reason. That's because they have been doing this for a long time, and they've got an individual, specialized solution if you're having trouble hearing. Crowded areas, maybe at the dinner table. Sometimes you get in a restaurant and you can't hear the person on the other side of the booth. Give Brentwood Hearing Center a call at 615-377-0420 and find out what sounds you have been missing. You won't believe some of the things you thought, wow, I haven't heard that in a really long time. You can find them online at BrentwoodHearingCenter.com as well. And the phone number again, easy to remember, 615-377-0420. It's the UT Podcast breaking down Tennessee and Purdue, and it starts right now.
Will Bowling, Lucas Panzeca, and the best insiders covering the Vols on Rocky Top each and every week. It's the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast on the Zone Podcast Network.
Welcome into a brand new edition of the Ultimate Tennessee Podcast, a bowl game edition in your favorite podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, as well as 1045thezone.com. Lucas Panzeca and Will Bowling with you as always, where we have a bowl game to discuss, something we did not expect to have when we started off the first preseason preview edition. And we now know that it is the Music City Bowl for Tennessee. The Vols, Lucas, are going to be right down the road from us.
Right down the road, taking on former Tennessee head coach Jeff Brohm, the Purdue Boilermakers, making their way to Nashville, playing in the Music City Bowl for the first time since 2018, which I don't know if you remember that game, Will. That was a 63-14 loss to the Auburn Tigers. That game, I think, was like 49-0 or something before Purdue scored. I just remember it being an extraordinary blowout in the first quarter. We know about Tennessee's first quarter success this season, so it'll be interesting.
I love, first of all, just the seriousness that you come on the show and just say, like, not even like you're joking, just, yes, former Tennessee coach Jeff Brohm going to be in the building. Yeah, that is a joke that I have overused already, and the game is still weeks away.
Yes, and we will use it plenty more times, make no mistake. But yes, for the neutral fan that doesn't know much about Tennessee football, I didn't know Jeff Brohm coached at Tennessee. Yeah,
really enjoyed his
He's
work.
He's in the midst there of all the six coaches that have been in and out.
Really enjoyed his work back in the early 2000s. Yeah,
that's
really
right.
Terrific. That game for Purdue in 2018, I believe they were down 49-7 at halftime.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Auburn scored 28 in the first quarter, 28 in the second quarter. Purdue scored a touchdown in the first and a touchdown in the third.
Spider-Man meme of Missouri first half against Tennessee and Purdue first half in the Music City Bowl against Auburn.
Yes, it's the same picture.
Corporate wants you to just go in there. It's the same picture. So the early headlines, we're going to get into a little bit of basketball. We watched Tennessee, Texas Tech, so you didn't have to. A little bit of the matchup against Purdue, National Signing Day next week, as this becomes kind of a multifaceted podcast over the next couple of weeks. But the headlines first for Purdue, as we kind of get into this matchup, we're going to do a lot of this over the next few weeks. The go-to guy, Lucas, David Bell, has already declared for the NFL draft, could end up not playing in the bowl game. But this dude has caught 93 passes for 1,286 yards and six touchdowns. Tennessee will be without Alante Taylor, who says that he has been battling an injury, wants to get healthy for the Senior Bowl. Would have been a really good opportunity. Of course, you don't know the matchup before you get the bowl game, and we can't blame Alante Taylor for looking out for himself as a guy who certainly gave his all for Tennessee, but we could have what might have been a really good corner against a really good wide receiver, and now neither of them might play in this game.
Yeah, and David Bell, I mean, what a player. Biletnikoff Award finalist, over 1,200 receiving yards on the season, All-American, check all the boxes. He's a guy that, as you said, declared, but has not made his status known for the bowl game. If I'm in Bell's ear, I don't know what he can gain by playing in the Music City Bowl against Tennessee. And then not only that, but George Karloftis, a defensive end with a first-round grade out of Purdue, also has declared for the NFL draft. So that's Purdue's two best players that have both declared for the draft, but have not said whether or not they're playing in the Music City Bowl, if it's the trend that we've seen in recent years in college football, you imagine they wouldn't play, but right now that'd be nothing but speculation.
Yeah, and they've got a lot of guys, Lucas, that have caught the ball. Four other players have recorded at least 30 receptions this season. Milton Wright, second, behind David Bell at 57 catches for 732 yards and seven touchdowns. You got Jackson Anthrop, fifth-year senior, who's got 48 catches for 497 and five touchdowns. And then you've got the tight end Payne Durham, who's got four touchdowns and 40 receptions this season. Purdue, one of the best passing offenses in the country, statistically among the top teams in all of college football. But it's odd that this team doesn't really score a lot of points. In the 70s in total offense as far as points per game, it's interesting the way that this team kind of works, right? Because they don't score a ton of points, but they do throw the ball really well.
Yeah, and don't forget a local product, TJ Sheffield out of Independence High School, a guy who's added four touchdowns this season. I remember covering some of his games when he was still playing in the Mid-State. Really good player. But yeah, Purdue's been one of those teams that has just popped up at random times this season with a few duds here and there, a 30-13 loss to Wisconsin, which if you're giving up 30 points to that Wisconsin team, that certainly is not something to hang your hat on. But they were that sort of nightmare for top five teams for a stretch there, which was really strange. But they knocked off Iowa when they were in the top five, a 24-7 result. They knocked off Michigan State when Michigan State was very highly ranked. 40-29 was the score there. Then they went out and lost to Ohio State 59-31 in a little bit of a shootout. So they've been up and down in that sense. They have sort of risen to the level of their competition for the most part, and they finished with a little bit of momentum with multiple possession wins over Northwestern and then Indiana in a big rivalry game to close out the season. So you can't count out a Jeff Brohm offense. I think one of their weaknesses has kind of been in the red zone.
Yeah.
When they get inside the 20, and we'll dive into the matchup a little bit more, I guess, when we get closer to this December 30th. But it is interesting because you have two high-powered offenses. Even if David Bell is not playing, I think there's going to be a lot of, I guess, attractive angles, whether you're a scout for the NFL draft or just a college football fan in general. This one's going to be fun. I think there'll be some fireworks in this one.
Purdue 74th in scoring offense at 27.5 points per game, 51st in total offense with just over 420 yards per game, 127th in rushing offense among 130 FBS teams at 83 yards per game. They throw for 340 a game. The best news, Lucas, for Tennessee fans at this point, starting quarterback Aiden O'Connell, a fifth year from Long Grove, Illinois. Can't say I've been to Long Grove, Illinois. You know how many rushing yards he has this year?
I do not.
Negative 111.
Oh, poor guy.
That's difficult. That's hard to do.
That poor guy. That is where college football counting sacks as rush yards can just be so cruel. Because that dude, I mean, that dude's buddies can pull up that stat for years to come and hammer him for it. That's just tough, man. At that point, I'm just feeling bad for the guy.
He had four carries for negative 44 against Minnesota. His season high, Lucas, 8 yards against Notre Dame, a game where Purdue was within a possession in the fourth quarter. He was 11 of 18 for 104, kind of started off the season really slow, had 86 yards at UConn, 104 yards at Notre Dame, and then kind of went crazy at the end of the year, eclipsing the 3,000-yard mark. So that is certainly the guy to watch as we get into kind of the first of our many episodes we have to kind of preview what Purdue does and take a look at all of those things. As far as the expectations for Tennessee in the bowl game, we touched on this a little bit last week, filling in for the Buck Rising show, but I think it makes sense that Tennessee probably wanted to come to Nashville. I think the story has been that maybe teams didn't have as much say in where they went this year as opposed to previous seasons, but I think it makes sense considering all the guys you didn't recruit out of Nashville that you would want to come to the Music City for this bowl game.
Yeah, certainly. I think this is best case scenario for Tennessee as it pertains to recruiting, and I think it's a good matchup. It's a fun matchup. I think that's important. And, you know, Jeff Brohm's been kind of – his program's kind of been tough to put a finger on, right? It's been tough to read at Purdue in recent years. He had a great run at Western Kentucky, and then you look at it, 7-6, 6-7, 4-8, 2-4, and now 8-4. This is his best season at Purdue, though he is regarded, I think, as one of the best offensive minds, at least in the Big Ten. So it is interesting just with the state of Purdue's program and what they've been and their resume this season, knocking off some – top 10 Big Ten football teams. But as far as recruiting, with the way Tennessee is trending, not only in 2022, but 2023 and moving forward. Yeah, I think it's important for Tennessee to spend as much time in the mid-state as possible and grab any advantage that they can, because that timing has been really unfortunate for Tennessee. When you look at the recruiting class of 2022, and Will, we have familiarized ourselves with them very well with all the high school football we've done on the zone this year. There is so much talent in this state. And you just look down the list, it's Kentucky, it's Georgia, it's Alabama, it's Texas A&M, it's Ole Miss, it's Miami. Even Stanford has come in and poached a couple four stars from the greater Nashville area. So this is a big opportunity, I think, to kind of make up some of that ground, although you're not going to make up all of it, because it's not Josh Heupel's fault necessarily, but the timing has been a real issue for Tennessee with its instability in the midst of arguably the greatest period of talent in the Middle Tennessee history, really, in high school football.
Tennessee's best commitment from Tennessee is Cameron Miller, according to 247 Sports, a three-star who's the 15th best player in the state. No disrespect to Cameron Miller, Memphis kid, Memphis Academy of Health Sciences, but when you had a year where Keaton Wade was your fifth best player in the state, Jordan James, a four-star running back, is fourth. You know, you got Berrion Brown, Ty Simpson, and Walter Nolan. You got two of the top 23 players in the country, including number two nationally and the number three quarterback in the country. And you get none of those guys. How much of this do you think is on Josh Heupel, and how much of this is the timing of when Josh Heupel got the job?
I lean more towards the latter, because you just think about the instability that Tennessee has had as a program in the middle of these guys' recruitment. A lot of those guys committed in the summer when Josh Heupel's maybe 3 months on the job, right? I know Destin and Keaton Wade out of Summit High School committed in the summer. Berrion Brown, I will say, out of Pearl Cone, a Mr. Football winner at the 4A level. Alabama pursued him really hard. He committed to Kentucky just about a week ago. But a guy like Jordan James, as you said, the running back out of Oakland, he's been committed to Georgia for quite a while. Right. But I do think with prospects like Walter Nolan in your backyard, who you felt like you've had a very good chance with and still do, this is recruiting. It's not over yet. Early signing period is a week from today as we record here on Wednesday, December 8th. So there's still time. I believe Walter Nolan, his time is not done as far as Tennessee pushing for him. But it's a big weekend, I know, this weekend in Knoxville. So the book is not kind of written on how Josh Heupel has done in 2022 in the mid-state. But in large part, I just think it was too late for him. But he still has a lot he can prove moving forward in 2023, because there's a lot of talent coming up that we know of that he really will get a fair shot at. And I think we can judge him a little more fairly after that. But timing's just been an issue for Tennessee. And look, they just need to make up that ground a little bit in other ways, right? Capitalizing on a coaching change and instability in another state with a very fertile recruiting ground. Florida right now, Chandler Smith, the four-star wideout out of Orlando, has just decommitted from Florida after visiting Tennessee. Capitalize on those things. The transfer portal right now, Zach Evans coming out of TCU. Remember his recruitment? Yeah. Five-star prospect, really considered Tennessee, ended up at TCU. Gary Patterson's gone. He's in the transfer portal. I believe he'll be in Knoxville this weekend. So
potentially
try to make up some of that ground in other ways if you're Josh Heupel.
I think the report today from VolQuest.com and Austin Price was that Tennessee's coaches were visiting with Zach Evans today, and that there was a chance he could be in town this weekend, that courtesy of Austin Price and those guys who do such a good job. But look, Tennessee has kind of turned it on in the past couple of days. They're up to 7th in the SEC, 18th nationally in the class of 2022. Addison Nichols, a guy whose stock continues to rise up to the number 4 interior offensive lineman in the country, kind of a middle 4-star prospect, not just one of these fringe guys that Tennessee has kind of had to rely upon in this cycle. But Lucas, I see an emphasis on JUCO talent. That's something I think Josh Heupel has really prioritized in this group. Of course, you get the guy now who's the number 1 defensive back of all junior college prospects in Desmond Williams out of East Central Community College in Mississippi. So I think this class is going to bet on its ability to evaluate guys that are a little bit under the radar and try to find the Cedric Tillmans of the world, a guy that Jeremy Pruitt came in with not a lot of time, was basically a 2-star guy with only offers from local schools out of Nevada, out of Bishop Gorman in Las Vegas, the Snoop Dogg program out there that always is on ESPN. He found that guy out of nothing. That's the kind of player that's going to bring Tennessee back to a position where it can then recruit the 4 and 5 star guys, kind of like Rick Barnes using 3-star Admiral Schofield and 3-star Grant Williams to then allow himself to recruit Jaden Springer, Keon Johnson, and Kennedy Chandler.
Yeah. When you say Bishop Gorman, anytime you name a school with the word Bishop, I just, my mind jumps to Bishop Sycamore, and I think that's what you're referencing. I feel bad for all the principals and athletic directors and administrators at schools with the word Bishop in the beginning. But no, you're right. And the transfer portal is so huge for Josh Heupel. We saw that this offseason. As much as Tennessee got poached in the transfer portal with guys leaving for Oklahoma and for other programs, Tennessee did benefit from it pretty greatly. Josh Heupel did a good job of kind of attacking that as soon as he stepped on campus. That's going to be so huge for this team. It's essentially another channel of recruiting now, right? I mean, programs essentially have scouting departments that just look at other college programs. That wasn't a thing of the past. Not JUCO, other Power 5 programs to scout potential transfer portal additions to your football team. It's kind of a new era in college football in that sense. So you could finish outside of the top 10, top 15 in the 247 Sports Composite or whatever recruiting site you look at, but bring in 3 or 4 really impact guys in the transfer portal that have a couple of years of Power 5 college football under their belt or Group of 5 college football. And that doesn't really show in the recruiting rankings that we kind of obsess ourselves with, but it's hugely important for Josh Heupel and his staff to attack that as much as possible. And Zach Evans is a prime example of that. So again, I think that'd just be another example of making up the ground that you've lost in Tennessee. Maybe they could swing it in at the last minute, get one or two guys in the mid-state. Maybe the story's not written on Walter Nolan, who just won a state championship in Powell High School right outside of Knoxville. But really, if they can make up ground in those other ways, transfer portal, taking advantage of instability, we're in the middle of the craziest coaching carousel in college football history.
Right.
How can Tennessee take advantage?
All right. So I mentioned basketball, and we're going to have to talk just a little bit of Tennessee basketball because we watched Tennessee and Texas Tech. So hopefully you didn't. And we can just provide you the cliff notes of what was one of the ugliest games of athletics. Of sporting contests where points are tallied and scored and a winner and loser is handed out that I have ever seen. This was atrocious by both teams and by Syracuse and Villanova, who played afterwards, who also shot horribly in Madison Square Garden on Tuesday night.
Yeah, it must be contagious. My goodness, the home of the New York Knicks. I saw, I think Grant Ramey put this out, that Villanova fans must have the lowest opinion of Tennessee basketball when you think about that blowout. In Connecticut at the Cheez-It Classic or whatever it was a couple of weeks ago. And then the fans that showed up early, man, these guys, number 13 team in the country.
I had the exact same thought. I mean, Tennessee was 6 of 40 from 3. And in the second half, they were 19 of 21 from 3. And one of them was a wide open shot from your best 3-point shooter that would have won you the game despite all of these things. Like, I don't understand the people that are, the sky is falling today about December basketball. The only time you're allowed to do that is when you play Memphis or when you play a team in-state, a rivalry matchup that matters. Other than that, this doesn't matter. This we don't know what this team's identity is because, Lucas, you could take this two very different ways and say, wow, Tennessee is really bad at shooting the ball and has no chance of beating anybody good this year. Or you could take this direction of, wow, Tennessee had a chance to beat an NCAA tournament team that's ranked in the top 20 from KenPom. Despite making 6 of 43s, they must be the best defensive college basketball team of all time.
Yeah, fantastic defensive performance by Tennessee. 8 blocks on the day, 6 steals. I mean, forced 15 turnovers. A fantastic defensive performance by Rick Barnes's group. Best defensive performance of the season, worst offensive performance of the season by a large margin on both sides.
Yes.
I thought the most stunning stat of this game, Will, and this is where I think you could argue Tennessee, despite the horrific shooting, you could argue it lost this game on the boards offensively. Rob Lewis, I saw, put this out there from BallQuest. 5 second chance points on the night. That is stunning to me. Look back at that first game of the season against UT Martin. Tennessee set a program record for 3-pointers in a game, right? Was it 3-pointers made or attempted in the game, if you could refresh my memory? There were 17 of 40. I can't remember if that was for 3-pointers made or attempted.
I think it was both. Because there was one 3 today that got changed to a 2. So Tennessee now, 24 hours later, had 39 threes last night.
Oh, I totally missed that. Okay, well, that was going to be my point, that they tied the record. But I did not see that one of them got wiped off. That is funny. So Yeah, there you go. I mean, they shot it. They kept shooting. And I was kind of stuck between, clearly that's not working. How about trying something different? And keep shooting, because this can't possibly keep happening.
I was right in the middle there.
I was honestly okay with them continuing to shoot, because I just said, this cannot possibly continue. And it did. It's really amazing that they even had a chance to win at the end with a great look from Santiago Viscovi. Concerning to me that Justin Powell played 7-8 minutes there, where that is what he was brought in to do.
Yeah.
A pure shooter on the wing from Auburn. I wonder if there's something going on there, if there's something he's not getting, that he's not getting that opportunity in the middle of that game. But yeah, look, this is one that you, as a fan media member, certainly not if you're Rick Barnes, but you just want to kind of throw away and forget about. But it has become I don't want to say disturbing, but maybe it is a disturbing trend in the Rick Barnes era that this happens a little more often than people would like, right? I feel like this happens with a form of consistency that, you know, is perturbing, as Blaine Bishop would eloquently say on The Zone to a lot of Tennessee fans.
No doubt. And I want to compare this team, at least the way that it's composed and the way it wants to play, to 2018-19 Auburn, the team that made the run all the way to the Final Four, that crushed Tennessee in Bridgestone Arena in the SEC Tournament Championship game, a game that I am still kind of mad about. I'm not going to lie to you about that, knowing as many Auburn people as both of us do. But the difference between that team and this Tennessee team was they had Chuma Okeke, who had 7 rebounds per game, Austin Wiley, Anfernee McLemore, and Horace Spencer, who had 4 rebounds per game. Those guys were menaces on the offensive glass. You can't shoot 43s a game and not have a good rebounder at a couple of positions. It can't just be at the 5, and it can't just be at the 4. And when you play a small lineup that has Josiah Jordan-James at the 4, your 5 and John Fulkerson has to be a bruiser inside who demands the basketball and owns the low block. And what have we seen from John Fulkerson over the past 2 years? We've seen a lot of good. We saw a lot of blocks on Tuesday night. We have not seen a guy who demands the ball in the low post and makes the paint his area. We're still waiting on that. And with Kennedy Chandler being the guy, I thought we would see a more assertive John Fulkerson early, because Kennedy Chandler was just going to force him the basketball. And that has been the case at times this year. But Lucas, my biggest issue, I agree with what Wes Rucker wrote yesterday on GoVols 247. Tennessee doesn't have a plan B right now. Outside of Santiago Viscovi and Kennedy Chandler carrying this team and John Fulkerson giving you 10.6 boards a night and just being consistently good, this team needs somebody else to step up and be great. Because at this point, Santiago Viscovi, or Vescovi, excuse me, whatever, is a guy that is getting in foul trouble every single night. Kennedy Chandler is still a freshman point guard at this point in the season, even though by the end of the year, I think he's going to look even more confident and kind of the best version of himself once he has almost an entire full season under his belt. You need somebody else. Olivier Kamwa, I think, is the guy who has to step up and be that 4 on the block and give John Fulkerson some help on the glass, because Tennessee needs to shoot threes. It's the Nate Oates way. It's the Bruce Pearl way. It's the way basketball is gone. You have to shoot 30 to 43s in order to be successful in today's college basketball. You also have to rebound more than 5 of them in order to give yourself a second opportunity.
Yeah, and you referenced that Auburn run in 2018-2019. I mean, their lowest scoring outing in that season was an 80 to 53 loss at Kentucky, right? That's the only quote-unquote dud or egg that they laid in that season. And even then, they hit 8 3-pointers. They were a touch below 30% from beyond the arc. It's not going to win you a lot of games, but I would have won yesterday's game against Texas Tech. I mean, think about that. 20% from beyond the arc would have won Tennessee that game. It would have been good enough. And we're not even talking about the free throws. 8 of 16 from the charity stripe, 50%. You literally hit one more free throw in regulation and you win that game. If you're 51% from the line, you win that game. So Auburn, you don't see Auburn and Alabama laying those type of eggs, right? If you're going to be that kind of shooting team, you can't afford to do that, because you can chalk it up to an automatic loss unless you defend the way Tennessee does and the other team has just a poor shooting night, because Tennessee had as good a chance as Texas Tech did to win that game at the end of regulation, as we saw. I mean, you're talking about a Josiah Jordan-James, you know, breakaway dunk away from winning if he doesn't kind of buckle up on the way and lose the ball in midair. So many things went wrong. Rick Barnes said after the game, you know, it couldn't have been worse on the offensive end. And I agree. I don't remember a worse offensive performance. We talked about that today, that going back to 2012, a 36-point outing against Georgetown. Like, that's as far back as you have to go, the Konzo Martin era, to find a performance that bad from Tennessee basketball. Just somebody dominant on the post. I mean, when's the last time Tennessee had that consistently, right? Not in flashes, not John Fulkerson scoring 27 in Rupp Arena, but consistently over the course of the season. I mean, the answer is Grant Williams, but
before that, just, then you really got to go back.
But any semblance of that would go such a long way. This team needs to be able to score in different ways, but it's with Kennedy Chandler. You can see that the freshman in him, right? You can see when he drives and he thinks he has that angle to go high off the glass. And it's like, you can read the block all the way through. You can see the block coming the second he starts driving and the big man starts closing down with the arms up. So that ball's not getting over those hands. That ball's not getting into the bottom of the net. And I think he's going to learn from that experience. Something's got to change in those type of games. You have to find a different way to win offensively.
Tennessee probably has the least amount of turnovers of a team that scored less than 55 points all season. I think we can confidently probably say that. They only had 9 turnovers in the whole game. 5 of them were from Kennedy Chandler, who I just thought played too much of this game, too. He played 41 minutes. I didn't think Rick Barnes changed up his rotation enough late in this game. The question I have on the way out here, Lucas, Brandon Huntley Hatfield played 4 minutes. He had 1 point. That's a guy who has got as high of a ceiling as Tennessee has on this roster outside of Kennedy Chandler. I want to see him doing a lot more for this team. And I think Tennessee's ceiling goes way up when Brandon Huntley Hatfield starts to give them the minutes you expect from a high 4-star guy like him.
He looks like he should be that force down low, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, Olivier Komwa on that note played 13 minutes.
Right.
I mean, pretty much disappeared after the early goings of the first half. So this team is still finding itself. We'll look to see what kind of improvements we get out of them in their next outing. Gosh, who do they even play next? They got USC Greensboro, upstate. UNC Greensboro, USC upstate, and then Memphis, Arizona, and then starting SEC play with Alabama. So got to get it fixed quick here in these next couple of matchups before you play that trio, bridging the gap between non-conference and SEC play.
And we are very excited for that Memphis matchup. We're going to talk a lot of hoops coming up next week. UNC Greensboro Saturday, 3:30 on the zone, and USC Upstate 6 o'clock tip next Tuesday on 104.5 The Zone before a game that I am very excited about, because I am excited anytime Tennessee or Nashville competes with Memphis. I know Ron Slay is as well, and we will be hearing from him on this podcast very soon. To talk about all of these things throughout the basketball season. All right, Lucas, good to talk with you for the first time about this bowl matchup. Lots more to come over the next couple of weeks. National Signing Day coming up next week. We will give our reaction to who Tennessee signs, who Tennessee doesn't sign, as we move forward into the end of Josh Heupel's first class. Make sure you subscribe to the show, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, as always. We'll talk to you next week here in the Zone Podcast Network.